Portichel Foundation scholarships include 3 scholarships designated specifically for every public high school in Baraga, Houghton, Keweenaw, and Onondaga counties. Learn how to apply at phfgive.org/scholarships. Interested in skilled trades, technical education, an out-of-state school, a private college, community college? We've got you covered with more than 40 scholarships available. The deadline to apply is March 3rd. Learn more and download an application at phfgive.org/scholarships.
Welcome once again to Copper Country Today and Good Sunday Morning. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation, and you can learn more about them and the scholarships that they're preparing to give out at phfgive.org. I will confess at the start of the program that I am the least capable lawn person slash gardener in the entire Copper Country. There's green in my yard, and I mow it periodically, and that's pretty much it. But there are people who pay a lot more attention to this than I do, and I probably should pay more. And among those people who pay that attention is a group called Keweenaw Wild Ones. And Marcia Goodrich joins me because there's a specific topic we want to talk about. And with spring coming up not that far from now, is kind of a generally good time to be starting to talk about what you might be planning to plant in your yard or your garden this summer. So, Marcia, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
So I will confess also that whenever I see Keweenaw Wild Ones, I think you're a motorcycle gang.
I know. I get that a lot.
I hear Steppenwolf, Keweenaw Wild Ones in the background. So, no, what is Keweenaw Wild Ones?
Keweenaw Wild Ones is the Keweenaw chapter of Wild Ones. And Wild Ones is a national nonprofit organization that is devoted to landscaping with native plants.
Why are native plants better than other plants?
Well, why do I think native plants are better than other plants? Well, there's lots of reasons. I think of native plants as our original plants, just like the pronghorns and the bison, you know, and the grizzly bear. And I think that they are valuable and worthwhile just because they were here first. They are America's native plants, and we should cherish them just for that. But there are lots of other reasons.
Well, obviously, we've had discussions on this program over the last few years about invasive species. Mm-hmm. There are plants that are here now that probably should never have gotten here, and they, in some cases, cause some real damage. They choke out the native indigenous plants. They're filling up our waterways, things of that nature. So
they are upending ecosystems. These invasive plants are brand new to the area, and unlike native plants, they're not part of the food chain. So the insects that always relied on native plants for food, and the birds that relied on those insects, suddenly don't have the food they need to eat. And you don't have as many insects, you don't have as many birds, butterflies as a result.
Now, excuse me, I look back and a gazillion years ago, we were covered by ice.
Yeah.
There was nothing here. The ice melted and there were rocks.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, there was nothing here.
I
suppose in that regard, everything to some respect is an invasive species because it all came here from someplace else.
Well, it crept back up from south of here. It didn't come from Eurasia. And for those many thousands of years since the glaciers left, all these native plants and animals have been busily creating their own little web of life. But when you bring in an invasive exotic that has no enemies, it can come in and just upend an ecosystem. And you can see it. You might not be aware that you're seeing it, but you can see it in places where, for instance, periwinkle is covering forest floors and there's nothing else growing there. Or the big stands of Japanese knotweed that are, fortunately, we don't have too many of them, but they're extremely difficult to get rid of. And there's Phragmites, and there's also oh, our favorite spotted knapweed.
Yeah, all of this has come here unnaturally.
Right.
As opposed to the long natural process that brought in what we consider to be native plants. And they came in as part of an ecosystem that brought with it some checks and balances.
Yes, it's real diverse. If something has trouble, something else can move into its place. Yeah, it's a real dynamic system. You bring invasive exotics and that all changes. And so when we talk about gardening with native plants, it's not like we're trying to necessarily kick out invasive exotics in our yard, though certainly we do that. That's the priority. What we like to do, instead of gardening with the conventional garden plants, most of which come from Eurasia, is we're trying to build back a little bit of that native ecosystem in our yard. And by doing that, not only is it really pretty, you know, it's a lot of fun to do if you're a gardener, but you are essentially giving the native bees and pollinators and butterflies and birds and lots of other wildlife a little bit of their home back. And you can do it in your yard.
And that's an important thing, because we're starting to see some real problems with two of the animals that you mentioned there.
Yes.
Bees are in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
There's an infection, there's a disease that's causing all sorts of problems with bees.
Mm-hmm.
And bees are so essential to everything we do because they pollinate plants. Without bees, we don't have crops.
That's true.
And so anything we can do to help make the bees feel at home and thrive mm-hmm. is probably a good thing.
Yes. Most of the time when people talk about bees, they're talking about honeybees. And they're not an invasive exotic, but they are an exotic bee. They aren't native to North America. They were imported by our ancestors. Yeah. By looking at you, I bet it's our ancestors.
Yeah.
Our ancestors.
I'm sure the Dutch people brought that in.
Well, they were great gardeners. And,
we got to pollinate,
of course,
those tulips.
And they're amazing insects. There's very few bugs that do anything approaching what a honeybee can do. But they aren't the insects that we focus on as wild ones. We look at the native bees more. And
okay.
there are many species of native bees, and they also are in trouble because they've lost habitat. And of course, they are exposed to all kinds of pesticides that we routinely use in our yards.
And other noxious things
yeah.
that we use that we may be able to shrug off, but something that's a thousandth of our size, it's a much more significant dose, and they have a problem with it.
Yeah, they die.
Yeah, well, that would be a problem. Now, when you talk about bees, there are people saying, I don't like bees. Bees mm-hmm. might sting me. I don't want them in my yard.
Well, it's hard for me to answer that other than to say that I'm sorry to blither here. I'm trying to get the right word, because it's true that bees can sting, but native bees are so docile that it would be incredibly rare for you to get a sting from like a bumblebee or a leafcutter bee. It happened to me one time when I was walking through my yard in a summer dress that I was so proud of, and the fabric was just floating in the breeze, and you can guess where the bee went, right inside it. And that, I got stung, and since then I learned to dress more appropriately in my garden.
Well, and they have the same reflex that we do, the fight or flight.
Yeah.
If they can't fly away, they are going to fight, but for the most part, they're just going to fly off.
Oh, it's true. And the same is true for most wasps. People have the idea that wasps are all like the yellow jackets that you sometimes provoke into swarming up out of a hole in the ground and stinging you. Most native wasps are quite benign, and you won't be stung by them either.
And a lot of them provide some very good services mm-hmm. as well. They're predators.
Oh, you said you didn't know about this.
Yeah. Oh, they're predators. They eat other insects. Mm-hmm. They eat other things sometimes.
Wasps are fabulous if you have a vegetable garden. The best thing for you to do if you have a vegetable garden is to put in a native plant garden next to it, because the wasps will be attracted to the nectar in your native plants, And then they'll look over at your cabbage and your broccoli and they'll go, oh, wow, cabbage loopers.
Ooh.
I know, my yummy. Favorite. I'm going to feed those to my children. And that's what they do. They can clean up the pests out of your garden.
Oh, there have been wasps that have been imported specifically to become predators in farm agricultural applications because they are so effective at it.
They're marvelous, but you don't need to import them.
No, we have our own.
We don't need our own.
Don't need to call Amazon and say, send me a couple of jars of wasps. Mm-hmm. We have plenty. You just have to, what do you plant in your garden wasps in?
Okay. Well, I'd say that, you know, any good flowering native plants are wonderful for that. And, you know, I'm talking about things that people really like to look at, like purple cone flowers. Those are really nice. Blazing stars are a gorgeous plant that a lot of people aren't too familiar with, but I think should be in everybody's garden. And, oh, gee, the showy goldenrods, asters are great. The false indigos are beautiful. There's lots and lots of plants.
Talking with Marcia Goodrich from Keweenaw Wild Ones, because I would think if I was a real serious gardener, I might want to have unique plants mm-hmm. in my garden. I want to show my garden off, and people are going to come and they're going to say, oh, what is that? I've never seen it before. Well, that's an Upper Mongolian nasturtium, and yeah. It's the only one in the UP, and all of a sudden, 5 years later, they're all over the yard and all over the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am that kind of a gardener, what can I pick out from the natural plants that are available that can make me stand out?
Well, what I would do if I were trying to find wonderful plants for my garden and I were just starting out with natives, I would get catalogs and go through them and find the ones that blew me away. My personal favorites are from Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin and Prairie Moon in Minnesota. And you can order those catalogs for free, and you can look through those and see all kinds of really cool plants. You can put in, you can put in harebells, which normally we see growing along the coast here in rocky crevices. You can put those in your garden, and you can end up with these lovely drifts of beautiful blue little flowers. And there's all kinds of nice violets that are nice. And later on in the year, what are some good plants? Oh, there are some really nice coneflowers and things that are relatives of like black-eyed Susans, like the orange coneflower, which is like a black-eyed Susan, but more formal and really makes a nice edging plant. And, you know, you can really get into the weeds if you want to. There's Philopendula. There's lots and lots of beautiful plants. And I just say, get yourself a good source and start thumbing through it and find the ones that appeal to you. But do make sure that instead of just getting a plant because it's pretty, get a plant that is beautiful that fits in the spot that you want to plant it.
Well, not only in the spot that you want to plant it, but perhaps also the time and energy that you have to devote to it. There are some plants, mm-hmm. I suspect, that take a lot more energy to make thrive than others.
Actually, that is one of the big pluses about native plants. If you put a native plant where it is happy, and, you know, you'll have to baby it maybe for the first year, tops, then you don't really have to do anything.
Okay, well, because they're comfortable here.
You have put it in the spot where it is happy. This is where it belongs. The only time I've ever had to do much of anything with my plants is if we're having a drought and I know that this plant needs a little bit more water than it's getting from nature. If I'd planted a plant that was better in dry conditions, it would be doing okay. Sometimes you might have to baby one, but that's your fault, not the plant's.
Well, and that's where you sometimes get into trouble with plants that thrive mm-hmm. in other areas, but not here.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you know, you're out there watering it every day.
Yeah.
And watching the little wheel spin on your water meter, which, well, they're electronic now. We don't have little wheels anymore, but we used to. Mm-hmm. And you're having to put down a lot of fertilizer, which mm-hmm. is not a good thing for the environment. I suspect the natural plants less fertilizer?
No fertilizer. Oh my gosh. In fact, that's one of the things people ask me, say, well, I can prepare my garden site and I'm going to do this. And I go, oh, please don't prepare your garden site. Just plant the plants that are happy in your dry, sandy Kiwanis soil. There's some great plant, you know, the lanceleaf coreopsis. It's a beautiful little yellow plant, throws flowers all season long if you feel like deadheading it. And it does best in dry, sandy soil.
And we certainly have a lot of that.
Yes, we do.
How do I get started? Let's say I don't have a garden, I don't have a garden. Mm-hmm. Let's say I wanted to start a garden. What kind of preparation do I need? I mean, obviously, I can't just take a spot in my grass and open up a hole and put some things in.
Well, you probably could do that.
I probably could, but then the grass is going to grow up around them. And
well, what I would suggest is, I would suggest a lot of things, but say you wanted to start an island garden in your lawn.
Okay.
That's an ideal situation. Lawn is not that hard to get rid of. Look how hard people work to keep their lawn going, right?
I will confess that a few years ago, I looked at my lawn and I thought, you know, maybe I should put down some weed and feed.
Yeah.
And then I looked at my lawn more closely and I realized that if I put down some weed and feed and all the broadleaves disappeared, there would be no green left.
And you'd have to mow it more.
I have to mow it because there are flowers in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't mow it, I get busy sometimes in the summer if I have weekend commitments with the radio station and such. It might go a couple of weeks, 3 weeks without me mowing it, and it starts to get lawn. And flowers come up. There are purple flowers that come up, and there are yellow flowers, little yellow flowers that come up. And I have joked with my neighbors saying, I'm just going to put up a sign that says, wildflower area, do not spray, and go with that.
Yeah.
So there are things that
actually
do come up in my lawn.
You know, if you take it to that level, certainly, you know, those little purple and yellow flowers are a lot better for wildlife than your lawn. But if you want to stay in the good graces of your neighbors, who maybe don't feel that way, then you could smother out a portion of that lawn, you know, lay down some cardboard or newspapers and cover it up with wood chips or something and leave it for a few weeks. And when the lawn is gone, you can just start putting native plants through that, right through the mulch.
Speaking of lawn, Marcia Goodrich, because this is kind of what spurred this program. Mm-hmm. I saw you at the Houghton City Council meeting recently, and they are talking about making some changes to their codes because there are some people who are getting a little cavalier with the lawns, shall we say, and the city people go out and say, you really need to cut that back, and the people are saying, well, I'm growing a natural lawn here. I'm growing an insect lawn or something like that. They're looking to try to define this a little bit better so that they can protect those people who are doing it legitimately and get cut back on those people who are just using it as an excuse to not start their mowers.
That's right. We don't want people to think that gardening native is just the same as letting everything go. That's not in our best interest either.
So suppose I wanted to take my lawn and knock out the grass that's mostly not there anyway, and turn it into something else that would be maybe easier to maintain, maybe better for the environment, because I would at least not feel the obligation to fertilize it, not that I ever have mine. maybe I don't have to cut it back as often, so I'm saving a little bit on carbon, gasoline usage, things of that nature. What options are there?
There's many ways to do a native garden. Right now, our Wild Ones chapter is doing a Start in Your Yard initiative, and the last part of it is coming up next month. We are reading a book called Lawns into Meadows by Owen Wormser, and he discusses in this book a couple of different ways that you can approach adding a native garden or even a meadow to your yard.
What is the difference between a patch of grass and a meadow?
The plants.
Okay.
The plants. Meadows used to be here, and in fact, there still are some meadows around here. And these are what would grow here before the shrubs and the trees take over. They're native forbs, flowers, broadleaf plants, and native grasses all mixed together.
So if I wanted to start something like that, do I have to then excavate out my existing lawn?
Absolutely not. You know, like I said, a lawn is pretty easy to get rid of. You're in worse shape if you have an old field, you know, that you're trying to replace. But that's a whole different story. Lawn, you can either till out an area that you want to put to plants or seeds, or you can smother it. Either way works. And then if you want something that looks like a wild meadow, then you would probably seed it to native plants and flowers. And there's lots of good seed mixes out there. If you want something that looks more formal, and that's what I've always done, then you can check out the native plants that are available, like through the two catalog companies I suggested. And there are a couple of really good sources for native plants around here. And I always tell people that you can look, get the catalogs from the catalog companies, and those are great references, but it's a good idea to buy plants locally.
How do I keep in good graces with my neighbors? Because first of all, it's going to be taller and probably, quote-unquote, shaggier than theirs. And secondly, my stuff might start spilling over into their well-kept grass yard, and now we've got a problem there.
I've never had that much trouble with native plants invading other people's yards. There are a couple of species that might, but they're easy to control. I'll tell you what is really a problem is when people let their lawns go to seed, and then those spread all over the place, and you end up with these non-native grasses crawling through your garden, you know, and that's not what happens with native plant gardens at all.
How do you keep it so that it looks like somebody, my grandfather used to have a saying about yards. He says, it looks like somebody owns it now.
There's a bunch of good ways to do that.
I mean, I might want to have plants there. I might want to, and okay, it's not going to look nice and, you know, 1 inch high like my grass did. But on the other hand, I don't want it to be 3 feet high and all sorts of weeds growing through it in the middle between all the other plants and such. I'd like it to look like I care about it, like it's intentional.
Well, a meadow is not going to look like a lawn. You will have some plants that might get hip high. Almost assuredly. There might be some shorter mixes, but it's my experience, especially when a plant, you know, sometimes will go to seed, it'll send up a seed head. But some really good ways of making something look like it's intentional and even beautiful are to surround it with a lawn. If you have an island garden in the middle of a lawn, then you're setting it off. It's like a frame around a picture. Another thing that I like to do to make sure that people know that my garden isn't an accident is I'll put up a little sign and it says, you know,
mine, wildflower preserve, do not spray.
Exactly. Except that, you know, and there are good signs out
except
there.
So that yours that people, really means it.
So. They do. And you can get those from a variety of sources. Another thing that you can do, I mean, and is you can put a little fence around it. You can put a border of rocks. A border of native plants around it. There are some beautiful ornamental grasses that could surround your bed.
Okay.
And you can put a lawn ornament in the middle of it. You know, you can do a very formal garden with starts where nobody is going to have any doubt that this is an on-purpose thing. And I'd be the last person to tell you that having a native garden means you will work less, because I spend a lot of time in my garden just partly because I love to, but partly because you still got to tend it just like you would a regular garden.
Yeah, it all requires, well, so does your grass.
Yeah.
In that regard. So does your grass. Everything does, especially if it's going to look nice and presentable and hopefully, in the case of natives, be legitimately helpful to the environment around it.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time here, Marcia, but I want to ask you a couple of quick questions. First of all, if somebody wants to be involved with your group, with Keweenaw Wild Ones, how do they get in touch with you guys?
Oh, it's easy. We have a website, keweenaw.wildones.org.
So go there, and we've got contact information there.
Right, and we also have a Facebook page. And so you can join our Facebook page. Just look for Wild Ones Keweenaw chapter.
And you mentioned sources for some of these plants. Mm-hmm. You have had sales.
Oh, yes, we have sales.
And are you planning some for this spring and summer?
We're planning some for this summer. And I hope that people consider buying from us. But if can I give a plug to the two other sources of native plants in the area? Dennis Greenhouse has a nice source of native plants, and you can get them all the time, not just at our sale. And there is a nursery in Marquette that's called Designs by Nature, New UP Native Plants, and she has a really large operation there. And one of the things that makes them special is that they actually go out into the wild and gather the seeds from the native plants right there where they live. So you know that those native plants are as native as they can possibly be.
And as accustomed to our environment, which is a very unusual environment in some cases, as they need to be to thrive. So
yes, they're
Marcia
great
Goodrich,
plants.
Thank you so much for coming, and I appreciate the insights.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Copper Country Today continues in a moment.